Hey, Damian Mason here with a question before we hop into this episode of The Business of Agriculture. If you farm for a living, you employ a lot of amazing technology, from your inputs that you put into the soil to the tractor that you sit in, your combine, and the amazing data that it harvests. But has your soil analytics kept up technologically with everything else in your farming operation? I would venture to say that no, it is not. Sure, you check for your nitrogen, your phosphorus, your potassium, your micronutrients as well. But what about disease pressure? Do you know what diseases and what pests you're going to face next year? No, you don't. But you can now figure that out with Pattern Ag's predictive analytics. Think about it. They can tell you now with testing what the likelihood of facing nasty diseases, things like cyst nematode or sudden death syndrome, what the likelihood of you having this in your field. Then you know how to prepare, how to treat, and where to invest your money. It's using technology to make you bigger yields and therefore make you bigger money. Go to www.pattern.ag to learn more. They are pioneering the way in predictive agronomy. Well, hey there. Welcome to another fantastic episode of The Business of Agriculture. We've got a fantastic topic today because you're going to see more and more and more of this. We're talking about catching money. We're talking about catching environmental money, if you will. John Duff was on this podcast about a year or so ago. He was a sorghum guy, probably one of the foremost authorities on North American grain sorghum production. As he told us back then, it's the number five grain crop grown globally, about 6.5 million acres here in the United States, how it fits an agenda of water reduction based on all the water problems we're going to have in the Great Plains there with the Ogallala Aquifer. But he's now a consultant, and we keep in touch. And he sent me a little thing that says, get your butterfly net out. And I thought, let's just have an episode about getting your butterfly net ready to catch the money. This is a farm bill year, 2023. Whether we're going to get a farm bill completed by the end of the year has been a debate. Now I've read a number of articles about the, shall we say, disagreements in Washington, D.C. One thing that you can count on, there's going to be a great deal more greenwashing, green crusade, or green initiative, however your political stance is, on what you think this money really will do. Is going to be, I think the farm bill is going to be sloshing around in it. If it's not the farm bill, it's going to be other environmental initiatives. We heard through the Inflation Reduction Act, which is actually an Inflation Production Act, that about half of that money's almost pushing almost toward $1 trillion of that money was really green initiative, new climate deal, new green deal kind of stuff. Well, John's not here being a smart guy. He's like, hey, you know what? We maybe can't change what's going to happen politically, but there's this money coming, and it's not just from the government. It's not just through USDA programs. It's not just through Farm Bill. It's also going to be through private industry. You know what? Maybe we can't change what's going to happen. We sure as hell better change our sales to take advantage of what's going to happen. So that's why he's here. Get your butterfly net out. John Duff, consultant, founder of Cerro Ag Strategies, and a return guest to the Business of Agriculture podcast. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Damian. I think that it was a Freudian slip when I sent that. And I love that because I sent it because I imagined myself with this net trying to catch funding that's flowing into agriculture from everywhere, whether it's Washington, D.C., whether it's New York, whether it's South San Francisco. There's capital flowing into agriculture to do a lot of things, but climate is at the top of the list. And I sent that because I'm trying to catch it, but you took it as environmental money. And I think that's funny that I didn't mean it that way, but that's how you took it. Maybe that's actually how I meant it subconsciously.
Yeah, maybe it is. And the thing is, we've got money that's, like you said, there's going to be – we don't know. You're not a DC insider. You're more so than I am. I've been saying this farm bill is going to probably have a whole bunch of funding thrown at this thing. We know that companies are coming to agriculture and saying, we're going to bring you money, but you've got to do this. And then there's a lot of skepticism. So I guess take me through what you see coming, what you see happening. You know, you're a consultant guy now. You've always paid attention on the sorghum side. Your background in Texas, there's the water issue. Just kind of give us a lay of the land.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you a little anecdote to kick it off. Field to Market is the big sustainability kind of trade association in ag. They do a big conference every year. field, in November.
Field,
I was at
Field to Market.
Field to Market, correct. So I was at Field to Market's big conference in November. And I was at one of the biggest takeaways for me was it was not a climate change conference, right? There were all the big NGOs that do have that in their purview. Were there many companies that have climate targets and things? They're all there, but there was so little talk of climate change, and it was all talk about ag productivity. How do you get a better ag footprint? Or a smaller footprint in agriculture? And it was struck me because the environmental community, the earnest members of the environmental community, have come to the realization that they can't come into a group of farmers in ag and it all be about climate. Farmers are interested in productivity. They're definitely interested in good environmental outcomes. They have to have the environment in good shape to produce. But they're not kept up at night by climate. And so the discussion has moved away from just climate all the time to how do we get more productivity? No farmer wants less productivity, right? They want to produce more with less resources. That is the essence of sustainability to a farmer, do more with less. And we've been doing that every year in agriculture for 100 years. And so that's a message that really, really resonates with farmers. And so it represents incredible common ground between the environmental community and farmers, in that both sides want more productivity, because more productivity necessarily means a smaller environmental footprint. And I think that's
way, really, do you think that we in ag know that? Do you think the consumer knows that? You know, I just had this discussion with my extreme ag guys. If you're a listener to this podcast, you probably know by now I produce the content for Extreme Ag, a group of larger scale, forward thinking, progressive minded farmers, and we were on with somebody from Rabo Agrifinance talking about this. We know that bigger yields on better farm ground using less inputs is good for the environment. You know, we're farming acres now that we're not farming acres now that we did 100 years ago. There's some acres in my part of the world that never should have been cleared of trees that are back in trees now, CRP, that kind of stuff. We know that. Do you think our consumer knows that we're doing that? My dairyman gets, 60% more milk per cow per day than we did growing up with, minimal amounts of new inputs. Do you think our consumer gets that?
I think there's multiple layers in that. I think there's multiple audiences, right? You do have a consumer audience, but they're worried. They're worried about the top line numbers. They're worried about whether we're moving in the right direction or not. If we're moving in the right direction and we're showing them that, and we're producing some top line, high level data showing that we're moving in the right direction, I think the consumer's going to be fine with that. The second layer of messaging is the supply chain, right? It's the folks that are selling to those customers. It's the multinational companies that are producing the food products that they're selling to those consumers. And I think increasingly they are starting to get their mind around these things, and they are starting to really think about some of those things. I think that the evidence of their concern in this, regardless of whether the consumer really wants that message or not, the evidence that the supply chain is moving in this direction through some force is the global carbon offset market. 12 years ago, the global carbon offset market was worth $3 million a year. A couple of years, the global carbon offset market was valued at $200 million. And it's projected in the next 10 years to be worth half a trillion dollars, I think, something like that.
Right, right.
It's growing rapidly. The consumer wants us to be going in the right direction. That next layer down, the supply chain wants to be going in the right direction and wants data on it and is starting to understand. And the evidence of that is they're paying for it through those voluntary carbon markets.
Okay. You said, I've got my butterfly net ready. So Silicon Valley was, we heard for the last 3 years, 4 years, maybe five, big tech had just wheelbarrows full of cash. So they brought it to ag. It became a trendy thing starting a few years ago. Biological companies are everywhere now. They started drying up, meaning the tech Silicon Valley type money started drying up about 6 to 12 months ago, I want to say, a year ago. But there's still more money sloshing around than historically. Then there's the USDA and the Farm Bill, et cetera. What else do you see happening? Is it just large corporations, not the blue sky, you know, johnduff.com kind of stuff? We're talking about even like Procter & Gamble and that kind of thing?
That's right. Yeah, I think that there's still a tremendous amount of capital that's trying to be deployed, that is being deployed, that's going to be deployed. Give you an example, KKR took a $300 million stake in Advanta Global. Advanta Global is the largest sorghum seed company in the world. That thing had 30% market share.
The largest what in the world?
The largest sorghum seed company in the world. Okay. Had 30% market share. KKR did that for two reasons. One, Advanta meets a rate of return that they need. And two, Advanta Global met a certain number of ESG standards that KKR had. Those two reasons.
To the person that's listening, that doesn't read the Wall Street Journal every day, like
sustainability. They did it in the name of sustainability.
Environment, sustainability, social, and governance. It's all about the, and really. I think it's these companies that want to be able to go and tell their shareholders and their customers, we care. We're a good company. We care about the globe. We care about the environment. We care about children. Isn't that it's a marketing. It's a marketing and public relations thing as much as a business thing. Yes.
Well, I mean, at first blush, it seems like that until you dig a little deeper and look at the stringent way they're still analyzing those deals and not making them if the rate of return's not there. Mm-hmm. They're being extremely strategic in making sure that it meets those two thresholds, and both are important. They're not making those investments if the rate of return is not there. And so from a guy who works for sorghum farmers as a consultant, I'm looking at that and saying, I don't care why they're making that investment. I'm glad they're making that investment. And sure, I want to make more investments. Yeah. And I want to stand up more projects and get more opportunities to get them to invest even more in sorghum farmers. Sure.
So you gave me the example of a company that's coming in and buying a sorghum seed company. Give me something away from sorghum. I know it's your sweet spot where you see money flowing in, and it's going to be not just for you to get a contract maybe for the sorghum business, but for broader based initiatives.
Water. I mean, what water is the one that drives it? There's growing.
I, by the way, I assumed based on your history that that's where we were going to go.
Yeah, you led me there. No, I think that water's got bipartisan support because water is something that is extremely, if we don't have it in abundance and clean, we're in huge trouble. Now, desal and technology, we'll figure out a way to fix these things, right? We'll paste over these problems and we'll be fine, you know. But that aside, I mean, just fundamentally, if we don't have it and it's not clean, we die in 3 days. Right? Like that is a fundamental fact of life on this planet. And so I think that it's something that everybody is worried about, regardless of your political leanings, regardless of where you came from, socioeconomic status. It's something that is alarming. And I think that we're seeing companies invest in it. We're seeing invest in all kinds of ways, the technology, incentivizing the farmer to stop pumping. We've seen some weird buyouts in places. We've seen municipalities actually doing buyouts to make sure that they had enough water coming down the river. We've seen other things like municipalities working with landowners upstream on riverbank control of brush and things to make sure that the supply is clean and abundant. So we've seen a lot of really interesting things. You've seen bonds, green bonds come in. You've seen grants. There will be more equity investing in different things. And there's a whole bevy of ways in which I think we're going to see the private market, in addition to DC, invest in things like water going forward.
So
that's to say nothing of water quality as well.
I wonder if an agricultural person, again, with my extreme ag people, I was talking about this. Let's say you are an irrigator. We've talked about all the shiny thing starting 6 or 7 years ago was carbon. And then finally, a few years ago, some producers started making money on carbon. It took a while to get there. And then we moved from carbon into, now they're talking about nitrogen. That's still, the carbon market's not even a market. I mean, it's not like, if I want to go and buy a Ford Taurus, I know how to do that. If I want to go and buy or sell carbon, it's just still a very murky marketplace. Nitrogen isn't the next thing that's maybe going to happen, very murky. On water, I agree with you, John, that we've never had an economic equation. We've never said what's a gallon of, I know what a gallon of glyphosate costs, but if water's a crop input, the same as a bag of seed or a gallon of glyphosate or a ton of urea, I don't know what a gallon of water costs. I don't know what an acre foot of water costs. It's different in the Panhandle of Texas than it is in Northeast Indiana than it is in California. It's not a market. So are we going to get to where, if I'm a farmer, we actually see a defined regional marketplace that says acre foot of water, an acre inch of water is worth X. And then is it going to be, if you decrease your usage of it, you get money? What the hell's going to happen? I mean, it's easy to say water and you've got municipalities paying for, to have you not use as much. What about at the farm level?
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that one. I can say that there's a half a dozen projects that are looking at the water credit piece and trying to start to think about building that out. And a big part of that, frankly, is just going to be price discovery. It's going to be, how do we stack the credit on top of the technology that quantifies it, and pull in the science of aquifers and stuff and the hydrology in order to make sure when you save it that it's actually staying in the ground, and then figuring out what price discovery looks like. Who's willing to pay? What are they willing to pay? Are they willing to pay? Are there such big differences geographically that the arbitrage is going to eat the whole thing and not allow this to even work? I think those are questions we have to answer.
We're going to answer them. We're also going to talk about where you have your net positioned, and also where the listener to this, no matter what, whether you're a farmer or in ag biz, there's going to be, it looks to me like there's money being, it's going to be blowing around out here. So we're going to ask John Duff where he's going to put his butterfly net to catch that money. Before we do, I want to remind you about my business partner here at the Business of Ag Success Group, Truterra, because they, speaking of which, are all about helping farmers get money for ecosystem marketing. It's a term that they use. Truterra is a division of Land O'Lakes. Land O'Lakes, an agricultural cooperative, been around for more than 100 years. Truterra is focused on supporting farmers at every stage of their sustainability journey to help them plan, make, and maintain regenerative management practices to improve agronomic, economic, and environmental sustainability for the long term. You can find the right program for the right field at truterraag.com/enroll. So the point is, if you think you want to make some money on environmental stuff, and I think this is, by the way, going to keep up, the companies like them are going to say, we got a bag of money that just landed on our lap from this company, Procter & Gamble, and they want us to go and sign up 1 million acres where they're pledging to reduce fertility inputs by 10%, and then we're going to get money. I think that's where things are going to go, but there's a skepticism out here, John. Is the skepticism funded? Founded. Okay. We know it's funded. Is it founded? Is the skepticism on the ag front founded?
Yeah, funded was a bad slip there because it totally confused me with given the conversation. I think a healthy dose of skepticism is always good, and it will certainly be good in this space. These contracts on the carbon side, for example, had some interesting things in them. There's been some pretty significant and negative impacts on farmers in some cases, depending on the contract, not all of them, but in some cases, the contracts had some really interesting things in them. And a healthy dose of skepticism, I think, is very, very positive. Also, you can't quantify half this stuff, just like you said. The sorghum industry, for example, is working on a biodiversity credit. that will be able to be traded and monetized. What exactly is that worth? Is it worth more? Is it worth less? Who's it worth?
Sorghum industry is working on a biodiversity credit. So, okay, I'm a sorghum farmer, but I also don't grow just sorghum. I'm going to be in that part of the world where you've talked about panhandle of Texas, Kansas, whatever, Oklahoma. I grow sorghum. I also grow wheat, and I don't know what else I would probably have, some pastures, some brood cows, whatever. And then you're saying, we're going to have a biodiversity program. We're going to give you some money. And that's going to come from a federal grant?
So no, the biodiversity credit specifically is there's a platform called the Ecosystem Services Market Consortium, ESMC. They've got a number of protocols that various credits can be developed under. And this one specifically looks at edge of field practices, stubble heights, things like that, and the impact on biodiversity in a field. So from deer to birds to butterflies, the biodiversity in that field. And then that can be quantified under the framework. And then those who are interested in improving their biodiversity footprint will be able to buy that credit. And when I say it's working on and developing, that's what I mean. Working on and developing is true, right? These things are nascent and they're in a price discovery phase. And that's okay. That's good. Like, we have to figure those things out.
Well, John, what I'm trying to make
is, think about it. Be skeptical. Like, if these things are, we're still all working these things out as agriculture.
All right. So I've got 15 acres of my farm property that is in conservation reserve program, prairie grass, wetlands, and tree plantings, essentially. I already get a little bit of money from the government to not farm those acres. I'm in a contract with the government, meaning I said I will not farm these acres, and they'll say, good, we'll give you, and they don't pay me what I would make if I cash rented it. But anyway, there's that. Do I get a chance to double dip on those acres in the next few years where then some entity says, well, that prairie grass and those trees sequester carbon? Where does this go?
Yeah, I think that the supply chain is really grappling with double counting right now and trying to keep that from happening, so that if you planted something that was specifically to sequester carbon and you were compensated to do that, most entities, I think, are not going to want to pay for that carbon sequestered again later on. And we can get into scope 1, 2, 3 emissions and all that. We don't have time in the 8 minutes it looks like we have.
But hey, you go as long as you want. You go as long as you want. Here's the thing, though. Then it screws you, because then they say, well, I was a person that did things right, and now I'm being punished. I'm not eligible for something that my neighbor's eligible for now.
Yeah, no doubt. That is a huge concern that everybody's grappling with. USDA understands that. The market understands that. The supply chain understands that. They don't necessarily understand how to handle it. But everyone understands that that is an issue. And in the High Plains, we have been largely no-till for almost 100 years now, because we have to be to keep the world from blowing away. And that was the best environmental decision ever made, probably, in this country, is to stop plowing so much in the High Plains. And it really had a huge impact on the health of everyone in this country, because the East Coast wasn't covered in dust.
We had a pretty good motivation. Let's not pretend it was just altruistic farmers in the High Plains. There was a thing called the Dust Bowl that was multiples of years.
And so that was a great outcome. And we don't want to punish that. Everybody understands that. We can't figure out necessarily how to get around it per se and not punish them.
Right.
But I think there's probably a way to do it, and we'll get there, because everybody is starting to understand that now.
So let's talk about the money. Again, you said, got my butterfly net out to ready to catch some cash. I think it's going to be largely climate oriented cash. And we've already said where it's going to come from. What is your strategy and where are you looking?
Yeah. So, water is a huge focus. I think there will be a lot of investment in ag supply chains in the name of water. The other thing is nitrogen.
Wait, water reduction. And that's mostly going to be, let's face it, starting about 2 hours west of Omaha. Yeah. You know, this is not going to, if I'm in Ohio, I'm probably not going to have anybody give me money to reduce water usage, because I'm probably not even irrigating. So
right. So the American West, you're going to see a lot of that in the American West, no doubt. The eastern component to this, the mirror image, is water quality, and water quality is all tied to minimizing nitrate reduction, nitrate runoff, minimizing phosphorus runoff, minimizing pesticide runoff. And that's kind of the other side of that coin. And that's why I say water generally. If I said water quantity, I would have been wrong. I mean, water, period. Quality and quantity. You got to have plenty of it, and it's got to be safe.
Yeah, I agree with that. So it's conservation in the West and certainly California, and it's then protection. We saw the phosphates in Lake Erie. That's been 20 years ago. We started hearing about the algal more than 20 years ago. So there's that. So do you think then all of a sudden I'm a farmer in Northeast Indiana, say the guy that lives down the road from me, are they getting money from saying you verify that you've reduced your fertility input by 10% and you're eligible for this? And then again, what does this look like and where's the money come from?
Well, potentially, or it is in biological nitrification inhibitors that are put into plants, or maybe a nitrification inhibitor that goes on the fertilizer. So urea fertilizer, dry fertilizer is coated in something that keeps it from running off the field. Or it could be as simple as just not putting the anhydrous down in the fall and putting it on during the season drop nozzles down through the corn. And that alone makes a massive difference in the footprint. So it could be incentivizing the farmer directly, or it could be deployed as technology that will enable the farmer to do that. And I would consider both of those things climate finance that would go to help climate outcomes, but also help ag productivity for people that don't care about those climate outcomes. They want more productivity, and this will give them that.
Yeah. So like you're saying, okay, if you use a product that, the old days it was nitrogen stabilizers to keep them from volatilizing and leaving, you're now saying, what if it's coatings on fertilizer? And then you're saying, well, that's great, but the fertilizer company isn't me. Then they say, well, if you use fertilizer that's been coated, you get this, is it a rebate or is it just a reduction? How do you see the thing working?
It could be. I think we're actually going to see a lot of that. You're going to see companies that nitrogen is a pain point for them. Right. And so they're going to identify a partner that's making a coating, and they're going to say, we'll pay the farmer through you. You're going to be happy because you're going to sell more, and the farmer's going to be happy because he's going to get better efficiency, and we're going to be happy because we're going to be able to claim the reductions that happened as a part of this, or the shrunk footprint because you have.
So does the money come from a USDA thing, or do you think it's you drive along Lake Erie and it says Walmart paid for a fertilizer? Walmart paid for a fertilizer treatment to make those fields to the south more efficiently fertilized with whatever. And so they pay for a phosphorus treatment that makes the phosphorus more readily available and less likely to end up in the water source.
All of the above. You're going to see companies with massive footprints like a Walmart or Target or name your company that has a footprint and they want to reduce it. You're going to see that. You're going to see the foundations associated with them do that as well. The top 20 foundations in the U.S. that are investing in this space invest about $4.5 billion in it per year. And that's like the top 20 private foundations alone only.
You're talking like the Sam Walton's kids have a foundation that supports, it supports a museum in Little Rock, and it supports this environmental initiative.
Yep. And then you're going to see USDA do it. You're going to see the Department of Energy do it. NASA is investing in ag technology to track all this stuff from space. So government's going to do it. You're going to continue to see Wall Street do it. Silicon Valley is going to do it and deploying capital via startups that are attacking these problems. There's going to be more invested in agriculture, maybe in the name of climate, maybe in the name of something else, who knows, but more is going to be invested, I think, in agriculture in the next 5 to 10 years than maybe has ever been invested cumulatively before. And it's a matter as those of us who work primarily with farmers, who are farmers, who are for farmers, it's going to be a matter of figuring out how we attract that capital in a way that is deployed in a positive way for farmers, and not just be on the farm gate to help another member of the supply chain that's buying from farmers that's not going to share in any of that profit with the farmer.
Yeah. So again, there's the skepticism, and then there's the idea that I know that the farm people are always kind of like, yeah, well, this is all great, and there's a bunch of companies grandstanding, but I didn't get any of this. So you always got to wonder where it's going to end up.
Yeah, for sure. But like I said, it may be that it was all deployed in a technology that makes a new nitrification inhibitor. And the farmer did benefit greatly from that technology. They just didn't see it in the form of a credit or a rebate.
Yeah,
or
they didn't get a payment, but they got a more usable, readily available source of fertility or a tool that makes the application. By the way, farmers love the bitch that they never make money anyhow. You and I both know that. But yeah, there's intrinsic payments or economic benefit that are not someone coming and handing you a $20 bill. And that's kind of what you're talking
exactly, about. Exactly. Yep. You got it.
So what do you think I need to know? We're getting ready to wrap up here. What do I need to know? What do you think? It's pretty hot right now. I mean, it's almost hard to keep up with. And it's also not like a marketplace. It's, again, if I wanted to buy a Ford Taurus, I could just go on to, you know, a website and boom and do that. It's all over. It seems a little bit convoluted, but it doesn't seem like there's one thing that you and I both agree on. There's a lot of interest in throwing money into this space.
Yeah, no, I don't have an easy answer for you there on that. It's like the old, how does a farmer hedge nitrogen prices? And at one point, the best thing to do is, like, if you looked at the correlations, the best thing to do is go buy stock in Agrium. And that was the best way to do it for a long time. And I think, unfortunately, that's going to be the answer for a while. It's going to be really hard to figure out how you play in this. I can tell you that in any given place, there's probably a half a dozen different climate smart programs that a farmer might be eligible for.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's all the companies wanting to buy carbon, and there's so many of those. And like I said, read the contracts is the most important advice I can give anybody on that. Not saying they shouldn't do it, but they should make sure they know what they're getting into.
Yep.
And so there's that. There are a number of funds, many of them publicly traded, that you could go onto Robinhood and set up an app and trade in these companies that are deploying these technologies. That's one way to get exposure. There's a number of ways here to get exposure to these. Is it easy? Is it simple? No, but is anything simple and easy in this day and age anymore?
No, and also it depends on what the payback is. You know, I think any of these things, I know early on there was a reluctance if you were an operator to say, okay, so somebody's going to give me $3 an acre if I make $20 worth of changes. Well, why the hell would I do that? You know, there is that. That's why there was a reluctance. But it seems to me that we've gotten past that initial clumsiness.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think we have for sure. But I'm not completely over it. I mean, we're still going to struggle in that respect in this space for a while. And, you know, it's okay. I mean, we're talking about agriculture here. It's a biological process that the good Lord can just blow up if he wants to in any given year, and often does, and set us back in some cases for many, many years. So it's nothing's easy, and this is no different.
Yeah. So I appreciate being on here. I see a lot of this. That one that Vilsack came out, Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack came out and announced it was $3 billion as an initial, just fling at this whole thing. And then was it just a few months ago that came out? And it seems like I heard about where some of that money went. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, absolutely. $3.5 billion through Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities, and the sorghum industry got a very large award under that, and we'll be deploying climate smart technologies, tracking data from the farm gate down the supply chain to figure out what it's worth to the farmer and what it's worth to the ultimate end user as well. And is it been tough with 141 projects funded under that? Has it been pretty messy, and have a lot of people been trying to grapple with how they work forward on that? Yeah, absolutely. But again, it's price discovery, right? It's trying to figure out what all these things are valued at and how to value them long term.
Yeah, one thing that I would say to the naysayers, there's a benefit here, and that is agriculture is, for the first time in my adult life, not been used as the target of scorn, and instead looked at as an opportunity for environmental improvement. And again, you can, I'm skeptical, trust me, I'm skeptical about a lot of this stuff. Climate, a lot of the entire climate crisis agenda looks to me about transferring money. But the reality is, if we're in this business, the first time it's not just evil, evil, evil agriculture, now it's agriculture as an opportunity for some environmental improvement. And I think that that's, you know, we're in the sandbox. Hell, we used to be not allowed.
Yeah, no, you're exactly. I think you articulated that very well. There has been a definite turn, and ag is seen as part of the solution now. And you and I both know that it should be and is. It's just a matter of telling that story through the supply chain and getting value back as a part of it.
Well, there you go. It's more importantly, we've heard a lot about telling our story. Let's get the money.
No doubt. The story has to result in value that accrues back to the farmer, no doubt.
His name's John Duff. He's with Cerro Ag. He's been on before. We're going to have him back in about maybe like an every year basis so he can give us a lowdown on where this money's coming from, because I think he's right. Keep your antenna up and keep your butterfly net out. Yeah,
absolutely. You got it. Look forward to continuing to talk on this.
If anybody wants to find you, where do they go?
I am on every social media platform imaginable, LinkedIn. You can visit my website, seroag.com, seroag.com. Call me, email me, smoke signals. I will respond to anything.
I'm a John Duff, John like the most common name in America, Duff like the beer that Homer Simpson drinks. My name's Damian Mason. Thanks for being here, buddy. Till next time, this is The Business of Agriculture. Well, that concludes another fantastic episode of The Business of Agriculture. This episode was brought to you by Pattern Ag. You know, everybody in agriculture understands the importance of soil health. We also keep an eye on our soil better than we ever did through advanced soil testing. But what if there was a company that provided predictive analytics? Not just checking out nutrients and all the elements that are in there, but also could tell you the degree of risk you face with disease and pest pressure. That's right. Pattern Ag can do that. They actually can tell you, hey, you're going to have a real issue here. You can preemptively, proactively treat for corn rootworm or cyst nematode or sudden death syndrome before the problem actually starts costing you yield. Go to pattern.ag. That's www.pattern.ag to find the nearest rep that can help you start doing better for your soil.